There have been one, two, three single day recruiting camps complete at this place, the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. And as per tradition, that's the number of things that we talk about on a Thursday on the beat. Welcome to the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. That is Jeremy Birmingham. I am Austin Ward. This is the beat, and it is a big Thursday because the fourth recruiting camp is today, which is Thursday, although we're recording on Wednesday. Full disclosure, full transparency on this show now. And we also have a Ross Bjork press conference. So a very, very June day for the Buckeyes.
It's pretty odd to have a Ross Bjork press conference in the middle of the summer, but obviously there's a lot of odd things happening in college football. We're 6 days out from the house settlement being finalized or approved or however we want to talk about it last Friday night. And now Ohio State's had a week to try to digest things, and we'll see what they present, what they show the world about the Buckeye Sports Group.
Yeah, so what, as you mentioned, house settlement, but also last week Ohio State was finalizing a non-conference schedule into the future through 2029. They were talking about and unveiling the hospitality premium suites and seats in the Horseshoe. You have the house settlement, you have ongoing college football conference expansion discussions, automatic bids, a whole bunch of nonsense all at once. And I think every media outlet in Columbus had been asking for some time from Ross Bjork to explain this thing, that thing. Going to try and do that all together. I would have 1,000 questions for Ross Bjork, Berm, but if you could only ask one, and that was your one thing, what would it be?
What does it mean? What does it all mean?
What does it all mean?
No, honestly, the one thing I think that really needs some clarification when it comes to NIL, when it comes to the house settlement, when it comes to profit sharing, all that stuff, is what are the limits, if there are any? And how do you differentiate? We were told earlier this week that as long as it's a publicly traded company, that company can broker deals with players outside of the Ohio State
purview
slash clearinghouse slash whatever. Those deals still have to be approved by Deloitte and the NIL Go or whatever.
But, and then once they're not, they're going to be subject to a lawsuit.
Right. But the question is, if Nike, which is a whole other ball of wax, and in my opinion, the apparel company should not be allowed to sponsor individual players that they're, but that's whatever.
Oh, really?
I mean, when Maryland owns Under Armour, Nike is owned by Oregon.
Well, I think that's a great point. And I don't know that anyone has clarification on how exactly that's going to work, because Nike is a donor and involved with Oregon. Under Armour has always been involved with Maryland. I mean, Nike is also a pretty heavily involved outlet here with Ohio State Athletics. So how do
but
they
there's
apply?
Not a personal connection there for the owner of the company.
Sure.
And I do wonder. That's, as I said, that's a totally different question. But for me, did Nike reach out to Jeremiah Smith, or did Nike reach out to Jeremiah Smith because he's at Ohio State? And so how do they differentiate between which of those deals are school brokered and thus have to be included in the salary cap? Or how do they determine that it was a free market, the company reached out to that person, and then that, because that's when a guy like Jeremiah Smith, like that post-market deal, the outside of the revenue share deal, is going to be where the real important things happen.
And how could you determine that? Because, I mean, Jeremiah Smith would be good on any team in America, but players that are at Ohio State in front of the largest broadcast audience in the country every single week and playing for a college football playoff, the current national champions and a contender every single year, that makes them more valuable to these companies by default. Jeremiah Smith would be the best wide receiver in America if he was playing for Wyoming. But the marketing opportunities are not the same in Laramie, and the amount of people that watch Wyoming games, they would not be tuning in just to watch Jeremiah Smith.
Right.
So we're following this thread like too far.
That is an important question, because Ohio State is one of the few brands in the country that houses brands like Jeremiah Smith or brands like Caleb Downs. So those guys are going to be offered a lot more money than just what is going to be included in the salary cap or whatever we're going to call it. So how does that get differentiated? And how does Ohio State still make sure that players like Jeremiah Smith are being compensated what they actually deserve, as opposed to what is going to be a very parsed down version of pay once the salary cap structure bonus or the all that stuff gets put together? I don't know how you do that. But I know that the agents for these kids are going to be darn interested. because that's limiting their ability to make money.
But the kids will be too, and the coaches will be too, and the athletic directors are going to have to be very involved in that as well, because there is this notion, Verm. I'm glad that you started with that. Out of everything that we could ask Ross Bjork about, I don't know that I would have started exactly with the NIL and salary cap part, but it is the most important to the future of college football.
That bird got close.
And those rosters and how they're going to look moving forward. There are people out there that believe, well, if you have this hard cap and that's what schools have to spend, well, that's going to level the playing field across the country. And even people around here have suggested, well, that could be a neutralizing factor across the country. It's not going to be.
No.
Texas and Georgia and Ohio State as well are not only going to be spending $20.3 million on their entire student athlete. Yeah.
Well, because there's only 14 plus for the football team.
Yeah. I mean, but even if you're using the 70% of that and you're talking 15 to 17 million, that doesn't cover it for college football playoff contending rosters. And you say, well, maybe that will make it more fair across the national landscape. College football has never been fair. For one, the brands and the development and the success and the support of the fan base are not even. And that is why you see some programs like Ohio State that are recession-proof because of all of the baseline support, and it's not going to be covered by that $20 million. And if people think that that's going to be the case or hope that that's the case, I'm here to tell you it won't be.
It might be for like 3 minutes, but then the teams that have always found a way to work outside of the lines will just find ways to work outside of the lines, especially in an era where the lines are less defined than they've ever been. We have a new enforcement arm that's getting ready to take, like, we don't know exactly how much teeth they're going to have. We found it interesting, or I found it interesting in having some conversations with compliance folks the other day, that there is a belief that the new
CSC
will have subpoena power, which the NCAA never had in cases of violations or, you know, getting people to actually be forced to testify to say, hey, yep, we did this. That's never happened before. So we'll see how that all plays out. But if you think that the boosters and the SEC are not going to find a way to just offset this money, you're really, really not thinking clearly, and you're being short-sighted. So yeah. Ohio State has always found a way to play in the gray area because that's what you have to do to compete on a national landscape. And if it comes down to it, they'll find it again. But the way that I'm talking about, the easiest way to do it, if for those companies that are the publicly traded companies, the massive brand deals that some of these guys are getting, and it's not everyone, that's the important thing. It's a very select group of people who get that sort of opportunity. But for Jeremiah Smith, for Caleb Downs of the world, if those guys want to keep being at Ohio State, there needs to be clarity on how you get paid, because if that deal then becomes a part of the budget for Ohio State, or becomes a part of the salary cap, then Ohio State is going to find itself in a very precarious position.
Yeah, and Ohio State also has to spend its money on other things, not just other sports, but in terms of supporting the football program and the fan base. When we talked with Ross Bjork and we heard from him last week about the hospitality suites, there's this big push for enhancing the atmosphere and modernizing the horseshoe. And this also has come back to a 5 or 10 year conversation about this building right behind me. Mm-hmm. That it may need to be upgraded, and there may need to be a multi-million, $100 million project to get with the times. And I'm curious where you land on this as thing number two, because I've got this question a few times. Which is actually, in your mind, more important? Renovations to the horseshoe or renovations to the Woody?
The Woody. That's where the guys on the team spend 90% of their time. I think that is where the meatballs get made, you know, like the kitchen, like the dining room is great, but the table is what the table is. It's really about what's prepared that makes the difference, right? So I think it makes more sense and more importance for Ohio State to update the WAC. And some of that is just vanity, let's be honest. It's not because they're lacking any functionality in here. It just looks a little outdated. I mean, it's brick, for Pete's sake. It needs to be all glass all the time. We need all glass. We need to see everything.
This looks great.
Yeah, this is nice. Yeah, but
there's a lot of trophies in there.
Yeah, but it's all we need.
They're shiny.
We need glass everywhere.
Okay.
I don't know that it's ultimately something. It is a vanity project, but it is still a part of the college football arms race that you have to pay attention to. You can justify like making some changes to Ohio Stadium to modernize some things, but part of the appeal of Ohio Stadium is the history and the tradition of being in the horseshoe. No one gives a crap that your football facility, well, this building's been here 35 years and look at it, it's old.
Yeah.
Like people, that's actually, when Nebraska's flexing, going, look at our facilities. When Northwestern is going, look at our lakefront facility, and Ohio State's like, here's our brick building. Now they're doing, they've done a lot. Like we see this side of it. Obviously they've updated everything else around here in the last couple of years with the Covelli Center, with the Ty Tucker Tennis Center. Like there's, everything else is updating. So yeah. This certainly has to be close.
Yeah. I don't think that they can continue to let it go on forever. But the notion that the arms race applies to the facility feels like a very 10 years ago, 15 years ago conversation to me. That
it is.
Because
a little.
That was at the point where universities and athletic departments had to spend the money. They had to put it on the bottom line because they had to reflect that they were investing in the student athletes while not giving that money to them directly. And that's how you saw putt-putt courses at Clemson and slides in the facility and these couches here and this theater system here. You're right. We know that the Ohio State players live in this building and spend as much of their waking hours as they possibly can be, not just working out, but building hanging camaraderie, hanging out, spending time,
thinking about the game,
everything. Breaking down film, eating, everything. So it does need to be nice, but I feel like there is a perception that it's like falling behind or dilapidated behind us, and that's not the case. And time does move fast. Like they had done some renovations to on the inside here about 15 years ago, and that's a long time ago. 15 years ago, Tennessee was finishing up its indoor practice facility, and it was cutting edge. And now they're saying they need to update and do the same things. But you're allocating money in different ways, and the revenue stream has to come, I think, from the building over there to my right. And I think you have to make sure that you can keep getting 100,000 people in there comfortably, that the amenities are there, that people are willing to keep spending that money, that in turn go into the players. And I say this a little bit tongue in cheek, the guys that are making $2 and $3 million, I think they'd rather have that money than like a 10% nicer training table. Now they could speak for that and I won't speak for them, but they could. It's not like Ohio State is saying, well, here's your money and go to Planet Fitness and do the work on your own.
Yeah, they're not the Cincinnati Bengals.
No, they're not. Like the Woody is still a nice facility.
Yeah. And I think that it doesn't really need the modernization, but I think it will happen.
Yeah, of course.
But there is, as you said, time goes by pretty quick. And we're 4 or 5 years away from different AIs or different virtual realities or different things being needed in here anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, I think you can modernize and update the technology and get yourself moving in that direction because everyone else is going to have to do the same thing anyway. So I don't think that the horseshoe needs as much love because I think people love it for being old and outdated. I think people love it for its cold charm. Obviously,
do they?
I believe that they need to change the scoreboards. Yeah. I believe they need to add a big scoreboard on the north end. Like, I think that there's other things you can certainly do. The turf, as we've discussed for years, stinks, and I think then they need to find a better alternative. But what else do you do? I mean, they've added all the LED lights. We've seen they just don't use them because they don't have times. And like the experience in the shoe that needs to be updated and modernized is the in-game experience, and it has nothing to do to me with the infrastructure and the bones of the building.
Yeah,
where I think that this issue that they're running into here is that A, they're running out of space, and there's a whole bunch of open space back here where you could renovate while you're in the middle of still using it. So isn't it wild that a spider's web like got from there to here in the middle of our show?
Yeah, I mean, nature is such a beautiful thing.
It's so weird.
It's just been, there's been so much poetry on the beat recently. You're not doing anything to affect
where this. Where is that spider at? Know.
It's probably, it's right up here somewhere.
Is it on my head?
It's hanging up out there. So you're with the Woody. I kind of feel like it is the horseshoe. It's probably, the answer is
America,
both.
Tell us your thoughts. What's more important to upgrade?
Yeah. I would suggest that the fan base would want the horseshoe to be really comforting for them. They're the ones that actually get to use it. But I can also understand that.
Well, sure, put in some heated grass in there, put in a heated field so we don't have to worry about slipping and sliding. I think
that way you don't have to move playoff games to the Hoosier Dome.
That's right. I think that there's things that they could do infrastructure-wise, and I'm somewhat joking about a heated field, but I'm not really. Yeah. We're in Ohio. It's an outdoor field. It's a $100 million stadium, billion-dollar stadium, whatever. Like, you can afford to just lay some pipe underneath the field and heat it.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need frozen fields at Ohio Stadium.
It's never a bad time to lay some pipe. Thing number three, Berm, I love a little mid-June checkup. This is a familiar question, familiar topic on this show. But as you look at the roster now, and we've seen what the pieces in place, there's no more transfer portal movement really happening or available to Ohio State. We've seen what the workouts look like. Now, if you have a chance to change your answer, mm-hmm. you add one person back from the national championship team to this roster heading into 2025. Is it a different answer than you would have had coming out of spring?
Still Tyleik Williams, I think, or even Ty Hamilton. Give me one of those two back, and you go into this season feeling a whole lot better. Obviously, it makes sense to say Will Howard. Like, if you don't want to have question marks at quarterback and uncertainty at quarterback, but I do believe Julian Sain and Lincoln Kinholz are going to be able to get the job done. My questions remain on the depth behind Edric Houston and Caden McDonald, and what Jason Moore, what Tywan Malone, what Will Smith Jr., what Jarquez Carter, what Eric Mensah are able to do. So those guys are in prove-it mode. And I'd really, really like to have somebody back from last year's team that you could just count on.
So no change in that for you. I think that's significant because that means that you also have continued confidence, as you mentioned, in Julian Sain and Lincoln Kinholz, that's not changed. We haven't had a chance.
Also with Malik Hartford and Jalen McClain, because the only other guy that I really think about in that conversation is Lyson Ransom.
Yeah, or Jordan Hancock, yeah. Potentially. You know, you look at that, but Jalen McClain, Malik Hartford, we talked about that on the Stock Watch. I think there's a lot of reason to be optimistic about what that three-man group at safety could look like for Ohio State. I would like to see what Julian Sain has been doing in the weight room. We haven't had a chance through three camps so far, or I haven't. I don't know if you've seen him in some of the earlier mornings.
I've seen Lincoln. I just saw Lincoln Kinholz walk by right now.
But. Yeah, and I don't think it's any surprise that he's always been an athlete, and now 3 years in the strength program, he looks pretty cut up. The uncertainty or the projection for Lincoln Kinholz is different. That is on field, and I think the uncertainty that you're looking for and what you need to maybe see differently heading into August for Julian Sain would be the physical part. So,
It's not just physical. I mean, it is a different kind of. It's metaphysical.
It's a metaphysical.
Will Howard did not look like an All-American type quarterback when he looked like a guy who's studying to be an accountant most of the time, right? And then it's the leadership. It's the parts of him that
I don't know.
He always was a leader, but like the difference for Julian Sain to me is like, is he taking ownership of the program? And I think that there's a real difference in the way, this is maybe sounds stupid, but like a California quarterback handles his team is different than the way a Pennsylvania quarterback does.
Yeah.
Or a South Dakota quarterback. And so I that's what I'm interested to see, because leadership is what this team is going to be lacking from the players, because every leader on the team pretty much is gone. So who's going to be that guy? And that's where, like, if I have issues with Julian is that I haven't seen that happen yet. But that's not...
It's like, intrigue.
I'm not entitled to. Yeah. I mean, it may very well be happening. I'm not suggesting it's not. Saying it hasn't, like, we saw it with CJ heading into his second year as a starter. We're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
He's taken on. Justin did the same. Justin Fields heading into the summer of 2020 when COVID happened. I mean, he was the guy out here leading protests to get, like, he didn't have to be that way. He was going to be a first round pick no matter what.
Yeah.
So it's just that side of it that I'm really like, where is it? Where is this?
Yeah. When you talk about, you know, Will Howard, though, and the leadership and then looking like an accountant, it was about summer camp number three or number four where we were in here and Will Howard was in there with Emeka Ibuka, like getting it, like not throwing, like high intensity running conditioning drills where the body changes were like, oh, well, that he and he's talked about this with us and in other places about how the support in this building was elevated beyond Kansas State. Kansas State was fine. It was good. Got people where they needed to be. And then it went one step further. We've seen that now with CJ Donaldson or other transfers that come in. Quinshon Judkins how it's elevated. But Will Howard, by that summer, like, oh, there's the physical transformation. Yeah. The leadership part, you've now had 6 months in that sort of primary role to build on that, and people were following and getting in line behind him. And again, just because we haven't seen that heading into camp practice number four doesn't mean it's not occurring right there. But if you're talking about what this looks like in August, because it's the only real differentiator that you can have in the summer. They're not putting on pads. They're not getting back out there to have full contact days. Quarterback's going live and you're hitting him. That's the only thing you can do. So you bring up a great point. Like, the one that you need right now, I think, is Tyleik Williams for sure. Yeah. But I don't think that there's any sense of panic behind these walls about what they have at quarterback.
No, and that's because they get to see it. We don't. Yeah. So, I mean, the question comes down to when we get to see these guys. And what will be interesting to me is it's unlikely either of them ends up being sent off to Big Ten Media Days to represent
the program. Will not be.
Because that would, you know, ultimately prove to be some sort
of... Not even a bold prediction. Right. They're not going.
Yeah, so I'd like to see one of them there because I want to always see the quarterback out front. But that's where we're at in this process. That's where we're at in this decision for Ryan Day. Like, August 15th is probably target date for finding out who the starting quarterback is. So the competition side of things, that they're being judged on everything they do. Like, they're being watched all the time. Who's really stepping up in that way? They don't seem to be panicking inside. People shouldn't outside either. We just don't get to see it. So as you ask, like, is there a concern or a question beyond the defensive tackle? Sure, but not really, because the defensive tackle is the one we hear about.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll get a chance to see Lincoln Keenholz or Julian Sain later on Thursday for camp number four. If there's anything to snappily judge, we will do so. But then if not, we'll just be back and break down everything we heard. Well, there's definitely going to be snap judgments. Yeah. We have Ross Bjork. So book it, put it down in ink. There will be snap judgments.
And Friday's the episode of The Beat will probably be fairly Ross Bjork heavy and also recruiting preview heavy for the weekend.
Got ahead. Visitors coming. So look ahead to that for a Freaky Friday version of The Beat. This, though, has been Three Things Thursday. For Berm, I'm Austin. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you later.
Ice Cube's Big 3 is back. The most competitive basketball league on earth is on CBS this Saturday. Big 3 All-Star Dwight Howard and the LA Riot take on Greg Monroe and the Dallas Power. Then Coach Rick Mahorn, Sensation Nazir Kaur, and the Detroit Amps look to protect home court against back-to-back MVP Michael Beasley and the defending champs Miami 305. The game played the way you love. Watch live Saturday on CBS at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and catch replays on BET.
Yay, yay!